Well, hey, everybody. My name's Adam Shaw. Welcome to The Restorationist, a podcast all about helping you increase capacity and becoming a better leader. And man, I'm so excited about today's show. We are going to be talking about how your church can move to multiple identical services, mirrored services, duplicate services, whatever you want to call it. It's where you repeat whatever you do on Sunday multiple times throughout the day. And as a result, you're able to grow beyond the seating capacity of your building. Pastor Mark Condon is here, and he's going to talk to us about how to get bigger without getting a bigger building, because that's what he's done. He's moved, God has moved in his church, and he's moved his church from one Sunday service now to three identical Sunday services, and God is transforming lives, and he's helping people. But before we get into that show and that incredible conversation, I need to let you know about two partners that I have here on The Restorationist that I think are going to add value to you. So first, if you're a podcaster, or if you're putting out sermon audio, or if you're an author and you've got an audiobook, any sort of podcasting, mixing, mastering, audio needs, I cannot recommend Apostolic Audio enough. It's who I use. Apostolic-audio.com is a company owned by my friend, Jake Faber, and he's a magician when it comes to audio. It's like Photoshop for audio, and he fixes all of the weird, you know, sounds and clicks and idiosyncrasies of my voice. I've given him some catastrophic audio failures of like some episodes that I've had, and for some reason he's been able just to put it together and make it work. And if you've noticed an improvement in our show quality, it's all because of Apostolic Audio. So again, if you get a podcast, if you are looking to improve the audio of your archived church sermons, or if you've got an audiobook you're trying to release, really anything, he can work on your audio for you. So apostolic-audio.com, it's who I use, and I cannot recommend him enough. Also, today's episode is brought to you by Christian Leader Community Coaching. You know, so many leaders I talk to, they listen to the show. They're like, Adam, how do I increase capacity? I'm looking for more than just another podcast or just another book recommendation. I'm ready to truly go to the next level. Well, you can either hire an executive coach at hundreds of dollars per session, or you can click on the link below and for $1, that's right, $1, sign up and join the Christian Leader Community Coaching put on by Ryan Franklin. Your first month is only going to be $1, and it's going to help you overcome burnout, address your gaps, become part of an incredible community of fellow leaders that are here to support you and help you and pour into you. It's who I use. You know, all of these products and services I'm recommending, it's stuff I use. I'm a part of the Christian Leader Community Coaching, and it has made a profound impact and difference in my life. The community coaching calls, the courses Ryan's put together, the customized personal growth plan is just truly invaluable. Now, I will put this disclaimer. This coaching program is only for those that are really serious about their growth. If you are just casual in your personal growth plan, you just want to listen to some episodes, you want to read a couple of books, and you just want to coast along, and some people are, that's the phase you're in. That's totally okay. But if you're like, man, I've hit a ceiling. I need a breakthrough. I need something to change. Christian Leader Community Coaching is for you. It'll help you grow. You'll have a tribe of that'll bring accountability into your life if that's what you need. And you can try it out. RyanFranklin.org/Adam Shaw. Click on the link below in the show notes. And your first month is only $1. All right, that's all for today. Let's jump into our episode, How to Get Bigger Without Getting a Bigger Building, with Pastor Mark Condon. My name is Adam Shaw, and this is The Restorationist. Well, Mark, it's so great to have you on the show with us today. We're so grateful that you took the time to speak to our audience about getting bigger without getting a bigger building. And we're here to talk about multiple identical services. But at the top of the show, I think it'll be so great for you to tell us about Infinite Church's story and the great things that God's doing and kind of what's led you to the moment you're now in.
All right, cool. First of all, I just want to say thank you for asking me to be with you. I'm honored. And so, Infinite Church is my life. It's everything that I eat, sleep, and breathe these days. And Infinite is now 9.5 years old, which is so hard to believe. Some days I feel like, that we just started this like a couple months ago. And other times I feel like we've done this forever, but we launched Infinite in August of 2014. And it's been a crazy journey all along. For 9.5 years, every Sunday, we've had first-time guests. We've never had a Sunday where someone new isn't walking through the doors. And so with that being said, it's obviously created growth that it's created challenges and some of it's exciting and some of it gets a little crazy. But we started off in a particular facility for 18 months, which was a gift for us. And it was an amazing location smack in the middle of the community we were in called Gahanna. Then we had to leave there after 18 months and we went to a convention center for about 15 months. Then we went to a middle school auditorium, which was wonderful. But then COVID hit. And of course, everybody knows that COVID was kind of a massive distraction. And we got shut out of the school. And so for 18 straight weeks, we had all these people. And I'm thinking, how in the world, God, am I going to keep all this together with all these new people and no place to meet? You know, it was scary. But, you just quickly have to pivot, and find ways to make it work. And so for 18 weeks in the middle of the summer and then into the fall, the summer was hot. And we were on this blacktop. It was on a parking lot. And I mean, some days it was so brutally hot. It was easy to preach about hell that you don't want to go there, And so then I kept thinking, hey, this isn't going to last forever. Obviously, we're in Ohio and it's going to get cold. And so we can't stay on the parking lot. And so I just began to pray and ask God to help us. And we found a building that was 2.9 million. It come down to 2.9 million because of COVID and, everybody didn't even know if we were going to live, let alone why would they be buying real estate. So I looked at it. We had about $60,000 in all of our accounts. We've always been debt free. But we only had $60,000, which wasn't going to buy anything in Columbus area. And so I remember we went and looked at the building and I came back to the office that I'm sitting in right now. And I just began to pray. I said, God, how can we do this? And I said, in order for us to buy this building, we would need $600,000 for a down payment. And I said, there's just no way for us to come up with $600,000. And this has only happened to me a few times where I feel like the Lord just clearly, spoke to me, not audibly, but just in my heart. And he said, why don't you ask for the whole 3 million? Because either one of them is a miracle. So if you're going to ask for a miracle, why don't you ask for the one that'll keep you debt free? Well, that made sense to me. So I walked out of my office into the living room, told Carol that, I think the Lord wants us to raise $3 million in 30 days. And of course, she's trying to be a good wife and not look like, I don't believe you kind of thing. And she just kind of shakes her head like, yeah, I think we can do that. So I remember going on Facebook of all places and June 1st and said, hey, we're going to raise $3 million in 30 days. I quickly received some Facebook messages and texts and say, Mark, don't do that. You're going to wreck your credibility and you're going to wreck God's credibility. But I really felt it so strong. And I remember I called a member of our church and said, hey, I believe that God wants us to raise $3 million. Now, we had never had anyone give us more than $10,000 at a time. In fact, that was a prayer. I said, God, we need some larger lump sum offerings, never, And well, this guy said, hey, I believe this. We'll get $200,000 towards this. And I was blown away. Yeah, I wanted to put my little helmet on and just run around and crash against the walls. I was so stinking excited. And I called another family in our church, and they said, hey, we believe in this too, and we'll give $100,000. So in a matter of 2 hours, we'd raised $300,000. I knew then that this was a God thing and God was in this. And so to make a, you know, shorten the story a little bit, in the month of June, we did not raise $3 million. We raised $648,000, which was enough for our down payment. And so we began to pray. Throughout the summer, more giving kept coming in. And we were 8 days from closing. We had worked months on the financing. And we were 8 days from closing. I get a call from a pastor that they had wanted to merge with us. COVID was like the, you know, final thing for them. And it was a church that had gone through a lot of struggles, but they had a building and they had some land. They had sold it all. And they were just really just maintaining. But a great pastor, he called me up and said, hey, you know, we would like to merge with you. And if you would be open to that. This is actually a couple months prior to the 8 days. And so finally on the 8 days, they called me and they said, hey, our church just voted unanimously that we want to merge with you. And so of course we could hear them on the other end and they were all screaming with excitement. And they said, oh, one more thing. We just want to, you know, tell you that we're sending a check over for $1,470,000. And that will, you know, of course, with all the other money we'd raised, that allowed us to be able to pay cash for the facility that we are in. Well, obviously this was a crazy thing. In fact, it actually went down. Central or Columbus, Ohio is the 14th largest city in the United States. And most people don't recognize that. It's a very large metro area. And so it went down as the most unique real estate transaction in all of Central Ohio that year.
Wow.
And so we wound up moving into this amazing facility. Part of the challenge was that, you know, we only can seat 250. The facility is incredible. It's gorgeous. And it sits right on 175 East Main Street of the second most affluent community in all of Ohio. So, I mean, God has strategically placed us in just a very timely place. Since we have purchased this building, which is a little over 3 years now, Intel is building a $20 billion plant. Microsoft just bought 175 acres. Facebook is here. Google is here, you know, all in these last 3 years. So without a doubt, God, I believe that God has strategically planted us in this little place for a reason. The town is only like 14, 15,000 people. And so it's, but it's a very powerful community, especially for the entire United States economy. And so it's, God has placed us here. So take that in that when we went in, we pretty much had to go to multiple services because of COVID. We went to three services like the first few weeks because of COVID, because we want to give everyone seats. But then we backed down to two services. We had never done two services before, but we were kind of forced because, we only seat 250 people. So we have a 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. service. And that's kind of the quick story up to this, where we are right now.
So if you could just, we'll just back up quite a little bit, because you know, you've had like four places to gather and worship, including the parking lot since you started.
Yeah.
That's a wild ride to be on. That is a wild. And listen, we get the COVID thing because I'm up here in the Great White North, and our COVID restrictions were 2.5 years long. And so those are pretty brutal. Thankfully, we did not have to be outside like you. We got to be inside in our building. But if you could just walk us through the growth that you have experienced, and obviously when you start a church, you've got like a launch team, which is your family and a few other people that have joined along. What is some of the growth that you mentioned? You moved into this new space, it only seats 250. So somewhere along the line, we've got from a launch team to a room of 250
doesn't see this. Just walk us through some of the, just briefly, some of the years of growth that you've experienced.
Okay. So we started with 15. We have four children. One of our children was married and the other one was seriously dating a girl. So there were 15 of us on our launch team. One family moved to help us here, and another young couple came with us to help us. And we spent 9 months to really dig out how we were going to do this. We didn't just go, let's go start a church. We literally took 9 months and strategized. We took probably over a month just working on the what does the first 7 minutes of our church look like? And from the moment they pull on the parking lot. So we really strategized. We spent that 9 months visiting a lot of different churches, churches that are associated with our particular fellowship, and then churches that weren't. I would say what I didn't realize all the years I was traveling, how God was shaping me for this moment in all the different environments, some that were not so good and some that were amazing. In all different kinds of organizations. So it was a college that I didn't know I was taking. So on our launch day, we worked like crazy. We wound up having about 25 to 30 on our core team, or on our launch team, not our core team. And so we actually had 172 on our very first Sunday.
Wow.
And true to statistics, they say whatever you have on launch Sunday, you'll have about half of that the next week. And that was pretty accurate for us. So we went down to about 80-ish people, give or take five or so. And so we wound up with about 80 people. A lot of them were people that had, you know, one day had been in church somewhere and just thought that maybe, hey, here's a new place that we can, you know, try again. And then some were, we passed out thousands upon thousands of door hangers. And so some of them were first time guests from the community, and we just kept nailing it. And the church kept growing. I would say in the first 4 or 5 months, we got over that 100 mark pretty quick. And that, you know, I think is certainly key, for church, growth and getting over that first hurdle. And then, the church just kept nothing explosive. Just kept gradually growing. We were probably running around 315, 320 when we hit COVID. And then that kind of splattered things quite a bit. That was definitely a punch in the face because, like I said, we went to the parking lot and people were afraid. So we didn't know if we lost them or if they were just afraid to come back, you know, I mean, like every other church.
Yeah.
And so then we bought the building. And we definitely had taken a hit, and we were down to probably 250 to get started again. And over the last 3.5 years, we've taken another, again, nothing explosive, but just a good, steady growth. And now we, on a given Sunday, we have around anywhere from 370-ish to 420-ish that show up on a given Sunday. I would say we probably are working with, you know, 450 to 470 people that faithfully come to Infinite. When I say faithfully, I mean they come once a month, you know. So we've got a lot of peripheral people that are first generational believers. And over the last 9.5 years, we certainly have had some move-ins and trickle, you know, other people, you know, that have come. Yeah. But we are definitely lopsided with a ton of first generational believers. If you walk in, you can quickly see that Infinite Church has all kinds of people from all different walks of life.
Yeah. And what would, and I know this isn't necessarily the focus of the interview, because we'll get to the identical services thing in a moment, but that steady growth, I mean, to me, that's the best kind. It's sustainable. It's manageable. You and your team get to increase capacity as leaders to, you know, grow with the church, as opposed to, you know, a big influx of hundreds all at once, and they have a great experience with Jesus, and because there's not systems or processes or the capacity to take care of them all, then you know, they can kind of lose faith and kind of fall, you know, between the cracks. What's been some of the key to that sustainable growth? What are some things that you have done that you're like, hey, this is what's worked well for us at Infinite?
Yeah. You know, I think as I travel around for years, the one thing I noticed that most of our churches are really good with defense, meaning we do church well for the most part. We have great worship. We have great preaching. We have great altar times. And when I say great church, that's to me great church. When you have great worship, great preaching that connects to the heart, and you have time for people to make those decisions at the end. Get those three things really well, and I think the church will grow, and healthy things grow. And so I would say for us, as I watched and traveled so many years, I thought churches do great defensively, but they don't have a great offense. And so when we planted Infinite Church, we totally focused on offense. And we said, we just got to keep evangelizing, and I constantly, like the first month of every year, I talk about the Great Commission, and I keep it in front of our people's face. They say that your church on Sunday morning, 5% of the people in your auditorium ought to be first-time guests. If they are not, if you're not reaching that number, then you've got to reiterate evangelism again. And so that's kind of been my little check mark. When I see that our first-time guests are not at that 5% level, that lets me know I need to preach about evangelism again. I got to keep, you know, vision is best when it's constantly dripping and not just like one, you know, let's talk about, you know, this on the first Sunday of the year and never talk about it again. So for example, and I know we're going to get into this, on our Vision Sunday, I talked about evangelism, and I talked about that we're going to start our third service. So we have one at 9, one at 11. We're getting ready to start one at 1 on March 3rd. Every Sunday, I have reminded them of where we're going. We've been having meetings. We ordered 5,000 more door hangers, which I don't even think door hangers are the most successful way to do it. But what it does do is it gets everybody in your church focused on where we're going. And then we're doing a ton of social media marketing. And that has really been our way of constantly keeping our church in the eyes of the community. We are constantly, we spend probably $30,000 a year just in social media, you know, evangelism, what I call cyber evangelism.
Yeah.
So we are obviously intentionally very offensively focused. And as a result of that, you know, it's exciting. You know, I did this series on fishing one time. And if you've ever been on a charter of any kind, you know, it's so exciting when someone screams fish on, you know, and everybody runs over the side of the boat and they're waiting to see, you know, what's going to come out of that water, and everybody's rejoicing. And it's kind of the opposite. If no fish are biting, everybody just sitting around daydreaming, doing nothing, and you can only coast in one direction, and that's downhill. So you've got to be intentional about being offensive. And so I would say that's been our focus, you know, for 9.5 years. Just keep pushing to reach the lost.
So we've gone from this launch team to breaking the 100 barrier pretty quickly, to all the stuff through kind of COVID and kind of to where you are now. Now let's talk about the identical services stuff, which it sounds like you had to do that fairly quickly in the kind of the growth of your church. When did you first realize you needed to go to multiple identical services?
When we were in the school, it's at 600 people. So we didn't need it then. Although there was something in me that wanted to even do it then. But we didn't need the space, and I felt like we'd be overwhelmed in that big room. So we didn't do it. When we got into the new building, we quickly realized that the room only seats 250 people. And we could have gotten them all in that room, but we knew that we were going to have to go to multiple services in order for us to grow. Now, going to multiple service makes you a nervous wreck for so many reasons. You know, like, oh, it feels great with it packed in here. You know, can our team sustain? You know, we don't want to wear them out. If we wear them out, and if this doesn't work, we're going to look just like fools, you know. And, you know, so it's all those mental struggles.
Yeah.
So And honestly, our first service, you know, at 9 a.m., when we first started, we only had like 70 or 80 people in it. And there were many times, you know, sometimes even as low as 60. And there were some times I thought, oh, man, this is like not fun at all. You know, and should we just take them all, you know, back to the 11 o'clock service? But then I knew if we do that, we can't grow, you know? So we just kept doing it, And the 11 o'clock service kept growing and the 9 o'clock service kept being a struggle. And so I finally would tell, hey, you know, some of you can come to the 9 o'clock service, that would help us. And we didn't do children's ministry at first in the 9 a.m. service. So that kind of drove families to the 11 a.m. service. So yeah. Finally, last year, we started children's ministry in the 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. That has helped. And so now we're up to about 120 to, you know, probably 120-ish on an average in our 9 a.m. service. Every once in a while, we'll get back down a little bit. And every once in a while, we'll bump up a little bit. But I would say our average in our 9 a.m. service is 120-ish. In our 11 a.m. service is, you know, we're constantly nailing that 200 mark. And we have tiny seats, you know, and so we don't have like normal church chairs. We have these, we bought an event center, and so they're event chairs. And so they're definitely not made for church rear ends, you know. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, so, people have been saved, sanctified, and filled with carbs. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. So it's very tight. And then we've had as many as 225, you know, 230 in that service. And it there you see like a chair somewhere, but it's crammed and it's uncomfortable. And so for a year we wrestled. I would tell our staff, hey, we're gonna work on going to the third service. And they roll their eyes and we're not ready. But somewhere in the last few months of the year, this past year, I think they realized that we needed to do it. And so everybody's on, you know, board, and we've been doing a lot of recruiting new volunteers. In fact, we just did a whole kind of volunteer enlistment service 2 weeks ago and had 39 new volunteers sign up. You know, and we're telling the whole church we got to get ready. And so part of going to the third service makes me, again, nervous for all the same reasons going to the second service did. I'm a nervous wreck about it because I'm thinking, oh man, again, what if it doesn't work? What if nobody comes? What if I wear my staff out? They'll all hate me. You know, people will leave, you know, all those kind of thoughts go in your head. But I just keep praying. I said, God, you know, we're doing this to reach more people. We're stepping out on faith like we've stepped out on faith from day one in this church. And so we're just going to believe that you've got a whole new group of people. We're looking at this like we're planting another church. And even though they're part of Infinite, because the truth is, the people that come to our 9 a.m. service, they don't know. 80% of them never been to the 11 a.m. They don't even know there's an 11 a.m. service, pretty much, you know. And the people that go to our 11 a.m. service, they don't even know there's a 9 a.m. service. So we look at it like we're almost, unless they're in a life group together, and then when we do corporate things together, they get to meet each other. But so we're looking at this third service as, we're starting from scratch again, except now we have a great facility and we have an army of people that are helping us. And we're going to raise up another entire congregation in 2024. So we're launching the third one March 3rd. And everybody I know, we're all pumped about it. I think there's maybe a few that, you know, they're scared to death about it or not happy about it, but we're pumped.
So why multiple identical services? And I want you to talk right now to, you know, the leader that is the pastor that's listening to this show. And there's a few of them that do, and they're beginning to hit, you know, 65, 75, 80% capacity of their building. And starting to get full. And they're like, man, we need to get a new facility. We need to get a new building. And probably they do. But in the interim, the best option is the concept of multiple duplicate services. Why should they go that route? Why should they make that choice? What are some of the benefits of multiple services that you've discovered doing two over the past several years?
Okay, great question. And I feel we've been debt-free from day one. We like being debt free. I can preach what I want when you're debt free.
Yes,
and, you can. And I don't have to lay it up at night thinking, gosh, how are we going to pay, you know, this, this massive mortgage. So to me, it only makes sense if you've got a great facility. Going to multiple services allows you to absolutely double what you are without adding any extra cost and to the church. And no church likes to have someone coming in front of them every week and say, come on, we got to give. You know, we got the utility bill coming in. We got this bill coming in. Come on, you can give more. You can give more. You know, that's demoralizing and I think unwise, really. So we are in the process. We've got plans. We're purchasing some land that's next to us. But my philosophy is it will not be wise for us to build the new auditorium, which we're kind of landlocked because we're right in the heart of the city. And so the only thing we can build will only seat 548 people. It'll be amazing. It'll be incredible when we get into it. But we're also a couple of years away and from that in reality. And by the time we get all everything through and get it built, I mean, so to me, I have told our team, let's do three services. And then I pray to God that we have to go to four services next year. And we'll probably do a Saturday night service and three Sunday morning services. But then if we do that and we can, you know, even if we have 200 in each service, you know, that's 600 people plus children. You know, at that point, it makes sense for us to move into a building, you know, financially and even the morale of service. Just face it, a packed room is so much better than a room that you feel swallowed up in. And so I feel like it's wisdom to me to not take on enormous debt because we all watch COVID. Goodness, this world's in a crazy place. And so why would I take on some massive $30,000, $40,000 mortgage, you know, a month when, I mean, something else could sweep through and you're done, you know? So I just feel I'm not against debt. I'm just against crazy, irresponsible debt. And so I feel like multiple services are responsible to the congregation and for my own staff. And also to missions. Our church is very, very big for church growth and our missions growth. And we give a lot to church plants and every year. So, and I want to continue that.
You know, this is great because as we talked about, and it will be announced in my church by the time this episode goes live, I've been chuckling throughout of it, especially when you got to the, oh my goodness, what if this falls apart? What if this doesn't work out? What if this blows up? And these are all the thoughts that I've been having, Mark,
because
we were, beginning of the year, we were 117% of capacity in our sanctuary. And then we had a significant drop the following Sunday because all the new people didn't want to come back and sit on, you know, strangers' laps. The last two Sundays, we have been like 98% full. And on Easter Sunday, we are going to multiple identical services. And our executive team has all been like, Adam, you got to do it. Adam, it's time. Adam, it's ready to go. And I'm with them. I'm there. But if it doesn't work, if it doesn't work, I don't want to look dumb or have like a momentum drop beyond what, you know, how it make me feel like a failure, which is something I got to give to God all the time. But it's just, I don't want the spiritual momentum because you're right. Packed church, like you have packed church and you have an altar call and like you've got to circle around the building to pray with new people because you can't walk through the altar. That's fun. That's a fun experience, but you have to do this so that you can grow. So you're helping me out as probably, you know, helping out a whole bunch of other people at the same time. What have been some challenges? Go ahead.
Well, let me just say this. One of the things I think it requires for growth, comfort and growth cannot coexist.
Yeah.
So you have to choose, do I want comfort or do I want growth? And growth is scary and growth requires faith. And so you have to sit there. I told our entire church, I said, listen, this may not work. I'm just, you know, it's possible this may not work. I told our staff, we are not afraid to try something and we're not afraid to fail. And what's the worst thing that could happen? It doesn't work. So we go back to two services, you know, and we figure out what we did wrong. And then again, if we're going to grow, we'll have to eventually go to three services. But I think the number one thing for pastors, I think that what keeps us stuck is we're afraid to try something. And so if we're going to trust God, you know, the whole saying is you can be a water walker or a boat talker, you know, and so it's time for us to step out on faith and say, God, we can control the setups of the times, but we need you to bring the harvest. And we'll love the harvest. We'll care for the harvest. We'll pray for the harvest. And we just believe this is going to work. And I'm prepared that this may be a struggle. We know that it'll probably work well through the month of March, and then we got Easter, and I'm sure all that will be fine. And I'm also prepared mentally that the summer, you know, may be a little bit of a hit, but, you know, we're going to just keep driving, and we'll assess it at the end of the year. Was this successful? And or what can we do to do it better? So number one thing, you cannot be afraid to fail if you're going to grow.
Now, what have been some challenges of multiple services, and how have you addressed or mitigated? Because obviously, it's been really great for you doing the two so much that you now got to do three. Praise God for that. But inadvertently, in all things, there's going to be some challenges associated with growth. What have been some of the challenges that have come up with duplicate services, and how have you addressed those so that you could mitigate the impact?
Well, I think probably the biggest challenge that everyone is considering is their staff, you know, is there volunteers, and will we wear people out? They say for every person you have volunteering, your church will grow by four people. And part of the philosophy behind that is people that volunteer fall in love with what they're doing and they share what they're doing. And so I would say challenges are always going to be, you know, staff situations, having enough people. But like our worship team, they do both services. We ask our worship team going into three services, would you want to just do two and we'll get another worship team for the third? And they all said, no, we want to do all three. That's an 8-hour day. By the time they get there at 7:30 in the morning for rehearsals and go all day, it's an 8-hour day. So one of the things we'll do now that we've not done going into the third service is we're going to cater in some like lunches and between 11 and 1 so they can get a quick sandwich and they're not sitting up there or in the message starving. But I think volunteers is probably the biggest challenge of doing multiple services, getting people that, you know, serve your 9 a.m., getting people or whatever time you choose, or the 11 a.m. and keeping it equally staffed. For us, our 11 a.m. services, they're two different environments. You know, like the 9 a.m. is a little older crowd. It's not quite as enthusiastic and energetic, but it's still a deep, great service. And then I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's because I preached the message once, you know, that I feel a little bit more comfortable. But it just, when the 11 o'clock crew comes in, it's crammed and the energy level is through the roof. It's a lot more multicultural and generational in that 11 a.m. service because, you know, there's a lot more young people and children. So that, I mean, that service is always, it's the most fun for me. And I kind of worry now what will happen at the one, you know, like, is that going to be like, you know, a softer service at 9, an energetic service at 1, and then another softer service at 1 or 11. So anyway, I think the challenge is probably the biggest challenge is your volunteers. And getting people in at 9 a.m., at least for us, to feel free to worship because it's an older group. And getting people when you're packed at the 11, getting some of those people to get used to coming earlier so they can help fill that environment. I would tell your church, you know, what time do you have church now?
At 10:30. We have it at 10:30, and we're going to go 9:30 and 11:30. Because Perfect. We wanted to be an hour between, you know, the service. So,
yeah, I was going to say, do away with the time that you have it now, because that'll force them to choose one direction or the other. And so I think you just tell your church, we may need your help to do this. It's a massive leap of faith. I think you build it with vision and say, we are out to reach this community. We are set now. We have the strongest foundation we've ever had, and we need this church to step up. I can't do this by myself. Our staff can't do this by ourselves. And so we're asking this entire church to help us make this kind of an even group. So when people, when our guests walk through these doors, we have powerful worship and engagement and energy through the day. And but I would say volunteers, getting them to show up is going to be, you know, the biggest challenge.
How, and you've already mentioned a couple of things that you're doing for three services. You're bringing in some catering. You're trying to do everything you can to support those volunteers that are there all the way through. Is there anything else that you're doing for three that you never did for two? Understand, we're recording this before you launch it. And so things, I mean, like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And so things are going to evolve. But right now, what are you projecting is going to be kind of different, or that you'll be doing differently with three as opposed to two?
Okay. So our format in our services, we've always opened with one song, then we do a connect, and then we do three songs, then I preach. Our services with altar call and everything last about an hour 20 to hour 30 minutes. And that gives us a half hour between services. So one of the things we're trying is we're going to do our connect right off the get-go. We have a big countdown that's playing all the way up to service time. That's about 20, 30 minutes long. And it's kind of scrolling things that are going on at Infinite, that kind of stuff. Serving opportunities. So one of the things we're going to do is we're going to do our connect right off the top, and where someone walks out as we start, welcomes everybody, and then we take 90 seconds and high five or fist bump someone around you, get to know who you're worshiping around. And then we're going to do three songs. So we're actually cutting a song, but not so much for time as much as we want the liberty to flow and not feel like, oh, I got four songs, I got to get these songs in, and you know, because that's our routine. So we're going to actually do three songs and take more liberty with those three songs so we can flow. So then we'll preach and do everything else will be the same. So I would say we'll cater food between 11 and 1, and we're changing up the format of our service a little bit in order to ensure, you know, that we have adequate space between the services to get people out, because a parking lot is also part of our situation.
Okay. Shifting gears, we got two more questions left, and reflecting back, if we just take that 30,000 foot view, we kind of swooped in, got a little granular there, and looking back though, what are some things that, as you reflect on this multi-service format, all the different changes you've had to make, what are some things you're really proud of as you've kind of gone through this iteration of doing ministry? What are some things you're really proud of? And then reflecting back as well, what are some things you're like, you want to know what? I wish we would have done this differently, did this sooner, stopped doing this earlier. What are some things you're really proud of? And what are some things you're like, hey, if you're thinking about doing this and you're a pastor, you're a leader, I suggest you do this rather than that.
Oh, great question. I would say that the thing I'm most proud of is the unity of our church. Although they come from so many different backgrounds, the buy-in, the engagement, the excitement of the people. When you walk in on Sundays through the lobby, there's just an energy of expectation every week.
Amazing.
I'm a walker when I'm worshiping, and I love to just kind of walk and scan the crowd. And I look out and I think, where would all these people be had we not done this? And every Sunday, I just get overwhelmed with gratitude. I would say our team, the team that we have, is amazing. And I work hard to release trust and authority to all of them. And our team just crushes it. And I could not be more grateful for the quality of people that helped Carol and I lead Infinite. So that would be the thing, I guess, that I'm the most proud of, the unity really of the team and the people. Then there's all kinds of things. Like you said, everybody has a plan until you're punched in the face. And that's so true, you know, yes. And yet I think, you know, I would think to not have a plan would be really ignorant, you know. So you have to have a plan, but you have to realize that there are going to be pivots all the time, and you're going to have to be flexible and have to change. So, there were some things I did in the beginning. I gave too much trust. I'm a delegator, and I gave out too much trust. And I don't want to say this to scare people not to trust, because I'd rather err on the side of too much trust than on the side of not trusting enough and squelching the ministry. But I gave a little too much trust too early, too fast. And that came back to bite me around year five. And because I kept thinking that, you know, it's going to change. We sailed all the way up to year five. And right after we got in the building, it's like we had never had drama, never had disunity, never had problems. I mean, just the church was rocking. And right after we got in the building, we had our first like big punch in the face. We lost about 30 people, lost a few of our leadership. And I take full responsibility of that. And just because of the lack or the total trust I placed in people that were not really quite ready for that much trust in me to definitely take my eyes off of it. But thank God we recouped from that and been sailing ever since.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point that often when you're really growing, you can either be a micromanager or you want to give stuff away so we can keep the momentum going. It's really hard. As a new pastor, I find it really hard to walk the line of holding people responsible for outcomes while giving them liberty on like the process it's finding that balance. But it sounds like you've got it nailed now. You're adding that third service and the Lord is moving. We see the baptisms and the people receiving the Spirit that are happening at Infinite. And so I appreciate your vulnerability on that, because I think that's something that every kind of leader, faces. It's just as you grow, it's like you've never been in it. You've never pastored a church this big at this time before. And so everybody's new on the job. And so I think this is really great, stuff.
Can I give one more thing too?
Please.
I'm a very driven personality. I get hyper-focused and just drive. And so I would say one of the other regrets, and I'm hoping I can help other church planters or other pastors, that listen to this, is I also drove my family, my staff, my kids, and I got great kids, and they jumped in, way over their head as well as we all did. None of us have ever really done it. If I would go back, I would have liked to have been a little bit more balanced in how much I expected of everyone else, because not everyone else thinks like me or drives like me. And I guess I felt this urgency. I didn't plant this church when I was, 30 years old. I was, 47 when I started. And so I'm like, man, we got to get this thing going fast, because I had this fear. If it doesn't work, my kids will be disappointed and they'll leave. And if they leave, Carol will leave, So there was this fight in me. And we had a lot of criticism going in, and so there was a determination. I look back now and I think God knew what I needed to stay focused. So I think somehow find that balance with your kids, with your spouse. I mean, my kids would say, Dad, all you talk about is the church. We just want to go out and eat pizza and just like be a family, So I was definitely at most of the time out of balance, and so much that after that little stretch after we got in the building, that things kind of blew up. I didn't realize through COVID, through the building, through the staff turnover, I about lost it, And so Carol made me go away for 21 days. and literally left. I took like three calls from the church in the whole 21 days. And she said, if this church falls apart in 21 days, then we certainly have not done a good job of, you know, building this church and or establishing this church. So I would say the other regret is find balance and enjoy the journey. We overestimate what can be done in the short run, but we underestimate what God can do in the long run. So this is a marathon. It's not, you know, a sprint.
Okay, I know you're going to help other people, but you've really helped me just there, because I am a very type A-ish, and so I know that is already my struggle. 37 days. I just looked at my calendar. 37 days in the new chair. It's like a drum that just beats in my head constantly. And so like a monkey on my back, I'm like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
And so, yes, learning how to intentionally pump the brakes as a means of keeping yourself in a sustainable pace is something I have to do, just to be completely honest with you. It's so hard. And so looking at your growth and seeing what God's done and you looking back and saying, hey, you know what? You can really grow and at the same time bring balance in your life. In fact, you need to. I'm gonna take that to heart, and I hope everybody else will. One last question before we go, and I really, really appreciate your time. What advice do you have for pastors who are growing and feeling the constraints of their current campus? Just kind of, if you want to button up the show for us and the conversation we've had about growth and multiple services and vision and navigating challenges and all the different things that we've just chatted about today, Mark, what advice would you give people to kind of close us out who are in that pinch point right now? And they're like, Lord, what do we do? Talk to us.
Well, I can only go by what we're doing, and kind of my focus is on this. We have a great facility. It's not large enough. We literally only have like 10,000 square feet, and we've got this fairly, you know, growing church of 400 plus people that use this facility. And so number one, maintain the facility with a high level of excellence. And keep what you have. That whole philosophy, be faithful over what you have, and yet keep vision in front of your people and let them know where we're going, what we're trying to do. Right now, we're in the process of raising funds, you know, to buy the land so we can pay cash for land. We actually have money in our accounts, but I said, I don't want to touch that because we're going to want to build, you know, so I'm very vulnerable with our finances to our church. You know, it's no secret to us or to them. And so I guess I'd just say, for example, we were going to put an LED screen in, but we chose not to, and we put all the sound and stage and got all that and all the lighting and all that in. But my media team and music guy comes to me and said, hey, and my daughter, and said, hey, what do you think about getting an LED screen for Christmas? And it was about a $60,000 purchase. And, you know, and I kind of weighed in my mind, well, man, we're going to go into the new building. Do we want to spend that kind of money? That's a large chunk. You know, do we want to spend that kind of money on this right now? And the truth is, we all really decided we're in this building. Let's have amazing church in this building. Let's, you know, we're going to turn it over. That room is going to be turned over to student ministry and children's ministry on Sunday. So why not do it right? Do everything with excellence and maintain the facilities that you have, and just use wisdom, I guess. I mean, for every situation is a little different, but we're going to pack this place out four times, and is our goal, is our plan. And then when we build a new building, we'll be ready to walk right in that building, go back down to two services, and then we'll build it back up again. And then at that point, we'll also plan another campus somewhere in Columbus. It's the kind of the long-term plan. We want to do the same thing somewhere else in Columbus.
That's incredible. And this is so inspiring. Sorry. This is so inspiring because this is what we feel God wants us to do here in Hamilton. We, you know, my dad and mom have turned over an extremely stable church, and God's really moving. We have tremendous momentum, and you've kind of given us a case study of what is possible with the help of the Lord and a whole lot of hard work. And you've given us some great advice to close out the show. Let's maximize the spaces we have. Let's not be afraid to try new things. Let's not be afraid to pull the trigger and do something that is outside the box. Why wait? I was talking to a good friend of mine. He's a presbyter in my section, in our affiliation, in our network. And, you know, I was talking to him about some of the anxiety I had about not wanting to fail. And, with the multiple identical services. And he's just gone through the same thing in his church in Burlington. And due to constraints, and he and I are both in insane real estate markets. Like Hamilton's more expensive than Brooklyn, like right now. Like it's easier to buy a house in New York City than it is to buy a house in Hamilton, Ontario. It's crazy. And we were talking, and he said, you know, I was struggling with the same things. And a friend talked to me and said, hey, who are you to limit the growth that God has for your city?
Right.
Who are you to stop revival? So kind of like get over yourself, get over your fear of failure, and stick your neck out there and try something new.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's a, you know, I was just reading in my devotion yesterday morning, you know, that what made Abraham a friend of God was that he believed in God and he had faith. He walked by faith. And so I feel like we honor God the best by stepping out in things that definitely you and I can't make happen. And it's not really faith if we think, well, yeah, I've got the team, I've got the money, I've got the, you know, the resources to pull this off. And when we stepped out and got this building, you know, like I said, I had people that were calling me, Mark, don't do this, don't do this. But it was crazy. I've never heard of anyone raising $3 million in 30 days. And it was bold and it was borderline nuts. And, but when it happened, it not only blessed the mayor, he's been to our church now several times. And he said, Mark, he said, we watched this story, you know, as it was unfolding at the end. He said, we didn't know who you were at the beginning because you were in another community, a neighboring community. He said, but when you got here, he said, we all, this city, the city council, we watched this unfold. Plus, there's now been churches all over the country that have gained faith and boldness by our story. And so this was, I believe, in the time of COVID, when we were wondering if we were going to even live, you know, in the time of COVID, in the craziest, most unwise time to be raising money, you know, we did something that God did something that was crazy and it never worked in our own ability.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate you being on the show with us today. We're all cheering Infinite on. Can't wait to see how that third service works. Pastor Mark, we appreciate it. And we're cheering you on all the way up here, up north. And can't wait to see what God does to you. Thank you for being on the show today.
My pleasure, my honor, and we're cheering everybody else on too because we want to see kingdom crowded.
Well, hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening. That's our show for today. Today's show was mixed and mastered by Apostolic Audio. You can visit Jake's website at apostolic-audio.com. Jake Faber's the owner there. Great mixer, great master. Apostolic Audio is like Photoshop for sound. He can edit it, fix it, mix it, master it, whether it's a podcast or audio from your church service, or you're recording an audio book and you're an author and you need somebody to help you with audio, he is your guy. It's a great full service that he provides for you, apostolic-audio.com. I've been using him for the past little bit, and he has fixed several catastrophic audio failures on this show, and I know he will do the same for you. Thank you, Jake Faber, for all of your hard work in supporting the restorationists. Well, everybody, that's our show for today. Keep increasing capacity. Remember to like and to share this episode with a friend and fellow leader, and if you are not subscribed yet, please subscribe. Take care. God bless.